Are you insane?
They are insane!
In the hands of an adolescent.
It is a cellular peptide cake.
Inaccurate. But Met Frosting.
It does like you.
Mr. Kim.
Hi, Christopher. I'm Nero.
How you doing, Mike?
Here's Spock. Whoops!
This podcast is dedicated to my good friend, Chief Engineer Jason McCarris, who is celebrating the birth of his child, his son, my son. What could have been, but wasn't. My son, the doctor. Get you right here. So human. Congratulations, friend. Well deserved. And now on with the podcast. And you know, besides those words, congratulations, Jason, in the 52, 53 plus years of Star Trek, there have been a lot of great lines. Risk is our business. The needs of the many outweigh the needs of the few with one. Cry havoc! Let's let the dogs of war! Well, that's Shakespeare, but that's fine. What does God need with a starship? There are four lights. But in all those years, in all the many iterations of that, the thousands of lines spoken, millions of lines spoken, hundreds of writers who have written those lines, thousands of actors who have spoken them, none have come as close to hitting pure perfection, indisputable perfection, as the five words I heard in the last episode of Star Trek Picard. My name is Mike McCaffrey. This is a podcast called I Just Want to Talk About Star Trek. I'm so excited. And tonight we're talking just for a short period of time about the seventh episode of Star Trek Picard. Nepethine, is that what it's called? It seems like some sort of like surgical equipment or surgical drug. Have you tried Nepethine? Try Nepethine. With contraindications of slow plot lines and boring plot lines sometimes. Sometimes! I'm burying the lead here. Bury the lead. Mike! Five words which have rocked my world. Have I teased it enough? Are you ready? All right, hang on to your hats. Here we go.
Desperate impulse.
Not this.
I regret it already.
Not this.
Copy that.
Not this. This.
I'll stick to making pizza.
Did you hear it? Listen again.
Desperate impulse.
No.
I regret it already.
Copy that. I'll stick to making pizza.
I'll stick to making pizza. My God. Have you in Star Trek ever got as much of a sense of awe? Have you ever got chills when you have heard a line that is so beautiful as that?
It's a desperate impulse.
Listen to it again.
I regret it already.
Copy that. I'll stick to making pizza.
Oh, my God. That was worth it, wasn't it? Wasn't it? After 25, 30 years of not having the next generation, we finally got it. I'll stick to making pizza. And that is plenty. You know, I've been sort of talking about this show and sort of kind of like half-assed talking about it, not really deep diving it, because up until now, there hasn't been anything to really kind of sink your teeth into. It's been a slow rollout. It's been Picard waking up and getting out of bed and shaking off all the cobwebs and slowly making his way out to the story. And here we are, episode 7. I can't remember if there's 10 or 13. It doesn't matter because we're finally here at the story, at the stuff of dreams, the stuff we have waited for. I'll stick to making pizza. Not necessarily that. Maybe I'm kidding about this. Maybe I'm not. I'm not sure. But come on, you guys. You have to admit that when you saw William T. Riker making pizza with Deanna Troi right next to him and they're picking tomatoes, it brought a smile to your face, didn't it? Regardless of all the nonsense that's gone on before this and the 2 years of Discovery nonsense, this is what we've wanted, isn't it? This is, and let's put aside weirdo card-playing Data, like puffy Data, and let's put aside Seven of Nine, who I don't quite understand why she's in this, other than the fact that that she's a popular character and they could get her. Jonathan Del Arco as Hugh, who was in it for a couple of episodes and did a good job. He did a good job. I will not fault the acting in this show. I think there are some actors that are better and are used less. But Jonathan Del Arco basically availed himself of my dislike of him as Hugh in Iborg. And so now, all of that is prologue to this. To this one shining, beautiful, gorgeous moment.
Impulse. I regret it already.
Copy that. I'll stick to making pizza.
Yes. Stick to making pizza. You know, the past three seasons of Star Trek, the past two series, have made their time in nostalgia, haven't they? They have soaked themselves deep into nostalgia. Discovery tried not to originally, but they couldn't help themselves. They set themselves 10 years before the original series. And that might be fine and good, but then they had to go ahead and just kind of dig into it by making Burnham, Michael Burnham, Spock's adopted sister. And so from that moment on, everything beyond that is a pale reflection against what it is trying to reflect or copy, which is the original Star Trek. And then in the second season, they doubled down big time. I mean, it was fine to see Sarek and Amanda Spock. What is her last name? It's I can't remember what her last name was, but it's Amanda Spock. That's all I care about. It was fine to see them in the first season and sort of have her say, yes, me and Spock don't talk. You know, we have a problem. He'll never talk about me. And then the second season, they doubled down and hard, didn't they? They brought back Pike and Spock. Spock was just suddenly, forget about the kind of references. He's there. He's like right there with a beard and like super crazy and number one and all of these references to the original series and beyond. Not Star Trek Beyond, although that would be okay too. But they just full-throatedly embraced this nostalgia. And now we have Picard. We have Star Trek Picard. And forgive me if you're hearing planes overhead. It's going to rain here in Los Angeles in just a minute. And so they diverted all of these Southwest Airlines flights, and they're all going to come right overhead. But now we have Picard. And Picard cannot shirk its duty to nostalgia, to the past. As much as it tries to slowly lurch forward with plot lines which are still deeply entrenched in Data and the Borg and Seven of Nine and Hugh and Ichab and all of these characters, it is pulled backward and backward and backward, even though it tries not to. But here in Episode 7, what did it do? It firmly embraced it. It happily embraced it. It warmly, comfortably embraced it. There's a subreddit on Reddit called Cozy Places. It's just pictures of adorable little houses with cute little cubbies where you can read books by a fire. And as I watched these scenes with Riker and Troy and Picard and Frakes and Sirtis and Stewart, I felt nothing but comfort. I wrapped myself in nostalgia and pizza. Now, if you want to go through some of the other beats of the show, sure, let's go ahead and do that. Let me just go ahead and turn. CBS All Access is just terrible, by the way. It is so hard to scrub through stuff. The minute you pause, it immediately shrinks the window down. I guess they're trying to avoid getting screenshots, or I don't know what they're trying to do, but the minute you try to pause and scrub through it, it will instantly stop. It will instantly shrink down. But let's go through some of these other subplots, because me and my son watched it, and as soon as one of those subplots came on, we just kind of, you know, we started surfing on our phones and stuff like that. Maybe we're not true Star Trek fans. Maybe we're not. Maybe I'm no longer a true Star Trek fan, or maybe I am wrapped up in nostalgia. But if you're going to give me Patrick Stewart and Jonathan Frakes and Marina Sirtis sitting around eating pizza, and then you're going to give me goofball Romulan Commodores wearing sunglasses and doing mind melds so they can give Allison Pill a pill, some weird like triangular pill so they can track her, I just don't care that much. I just don't. I don't know what her story is. I don't care that much. But that's how it started out. And then we go to the even worse storyline. Like, everybody on this ship, Rios' ship, I don't even remember what the name is. Is it the USS Placeholder? Is that what it is? Like, it is such a nondescript ship, and it is such a Rocinante expanse interior. But then we go to the Borg ship. The Borg ship has been nothing but nonsensical mystery, punctuated every once in a while, with goofball Romulans running around and walking around on hardwood floors with candles lit. And every once in a while you get Hugh, Jonathan Del Arco, who's doing a pretty good job. You know, as much as I didn't want to admit it, I do have to admit he's doing a pretty good job at this. And so what happens is he's a good actor, and then whatever this weirdo bad girl is, this Cersei wannabe, just slaughters all the Borg because that sounds like a good idea, and now she has weird permission because I don't know what happened. But then she challenges the hobbit guy, the elf who survived, the Romulan kid, Elnir. And I'm sorry, Jim, we had a little bit of debate. If you go to our Facebook page, you'll have a lively debate of us talking about stuff. And Jim suspected that this character might be dead, but I said, no, he's too pretty. He's too handsome, and his arc hasn't been completed. His Jonathan Del Arco has not been completed until Del Arco is El Dedo. And so that's what happened. Every Borg dies, but somehow the elf Romulan lives. Even though she throws a knife at him and hits Hugh, and then he throws it back. And then instead of shooting him with her disruptor, she just beams away in a heartbeat. So that's not good. That's not a good plot line. I don't care about that. It's still so mustache twirling. And I don't care about these characters, and he's got to get away, and sure, whatever. So we have all that. And then finally, we get to Nepethine, with Kester. You know, he used to live on a street called Kester Avenue in the valley in Sherman Oaks. And there's Kester right there. I'm sure they named it after her. I'm just like, oh, let's call her Kester. Well, yeah, I used to live on Kester Avenue. Sure, it was a nice condominium. And she's cosplaying, as they kind of said, well, I like to dress up, which is great. I love it. And then what does she do? She brings them in to Troy and Riker eventually in their little garden, in their happy garden. And so let's just bathe in this. Let's just talk about this. Let me just say that I've never been the biggest Deanna Troi, Rena Sirtis fan, but she is spectacular in this. I'm sorry, but as an actor, watching a fellow actor, her development as an actress has been volumes. She is really good in this because she's not trying. She still has the wonky accent that she created and no one else ever copied. Her dad was human. Her mother was a Betazoid. But her mother did not have an accent. Her father did not have an accent. She just has this crazy accent that she came up with. And she still has it to a degree, but it's not... Well, let's listen to it a little bit, shall we?
Mandaxic neurosclerosis. It's a silicone-based virus. It's very rare, and in theory, completely curable. You just have to culture the infected cells in an active positronic matrix, but by the time Thad came down with MN, there were no active positronic matrices, and no one was allowed to develop new ones.
Because of the synth ban.
So you see, Soji, real isn't always better.
So nice, and I didn't really hear her accent, it just might be her English accent, so nice and such an understated performance. As we talk about wounds with Patrick Stewart, I'm sorry, with Jean-Luc Picard, and his wound that pushes him forward in this story, which is that he couldn't save the Romulans, here we have a real deep wound. Riker and Troy's son died. And there was a cure, but because of the synth uprising, they couldn't save him. Thaddeus. Maybe after Thaddeus Monk, is that what it is? Because Riker's like a jazz trombonist? Maybe. And the way that she handles this, and honestly, Jonathan Frakes doesn't really have a lot of grieving in this. It's really Marina Sirtis's, and boy, she carries that ball across the goal line. And you can, it's not her weeping openly because she's been dealing with this grief for a while. And because she's a counselor, and so she knows how to, I burped trying to emphasize how good she was at this. I'm going to give credit where credit's due. Out of seeing her in 176 episodes of, or however many is in the Next Generation, and then in the four movies, this is the best she's done. Now, Jonathan Frakes, he's a little more all over the map, but that's okay too.
Hester told you.
I get the feeling that Frakes, I don't know if he directed this, but I don't think he did, but I get the feeling that he's got one eye on the acting and one eye on the directing, and when push comes to shove, he'd rather direct. He'd rather be behind the camera, because he does good in this. But the other two, and here's the other nice thing, right, is that every time the three of these guys get together on camera, they're all wonderful, and Patrick Stewart slips more and more into the Jean-Luc Picard of it all. And in fact, we have a wonderful scene here. Let me just play this final scene here between Patrick Stewart and Marina Sirtis. Let's see if we can.
Compassionate, patient.
No, we gotta go back here a little bit.
What I need to be.
You need to be Jean-Luc Picard. Compassionate, patient. Curious.
One other thing. Useful.
Let us help you, Jean-Luc. Pretend that our dinner table is the ready room of the Enterprise. We'll find a way forward. Together.
Hit the red alert!
You know, in when you're making a movie, or even when you're making a TV show, there comes a point where the character hits the all is lost moment, and you see it, like, I'm not telling you guys anything new, and then someone wisely gives that character what they need, not what they want. Jean-Luc Picard wants to find the answers to all of these, but what he really needs is permission to be Jean-Luc Picard again, right? That's exactly what he's looking for, and he needs someone with sagacious advice, with sage-like advice, to tell him these things. And it is Counselor Troi. She is finally, after all these years, truly counseling him. Remember how she would always just be like, well, you should do this, Captain Picard. And like he'd be like, yeah, I'm not going to do that. And go off and do something else. She was always one of the left turns, right turns, that showed him not to go that way, but instead go his own way, which was the right way. Here, finally. Remember in First Contact when it should have been her or Crusher who told him, like, don't do this. Don't let your anger, your quest for vengeance overwhelm you. So it's Alfre Woodard. But here, she gives him that magic feather again, tells him he can fly. Figuratively and literally. It's a beautiful scene. But the real plot of the story occurs right after it.
Burnt tomato.
We'll find a way forward.
Listen to it again.
Together.
Hit the red alert! Burnt tomato.
Burnt tomato. So if we are tracking the actual true story of this episode, it is not about Picard trying to hide Soji away from the Romulans and trying to figure out where this new planet is, because that's what they're doing. It is not about Rios and Allison Pill. I can't remember her name, and Raffi feeding Allison Pill a bunch of cakes. Allison Pill's also in Devs. I just watched her. Also being a kind of a robotic-like scientist woman. So maybe she has cornered the market on that. But it is not about her eating three cakes and then destroying that weird pill that she ate, that weird Allison pill that she ate, and then throwing up red velvet cake so that Narek can't follow her. It's not about that. What it's about is about the pizza. And we start off with Riker promising to make Picard this pizza, promising to stick to pizza. And then what happens midway through all this conversation to get him away, the pizza starts to burn. This is a genuine conflict. This is an obstacle in the way of Riker's goal of making pizza. All is lost as he runs over to this heavily smoking wood-fired pit. And while Deanna is dispensing the important information to Picard, the real plot line is happening.
We'll find a way forward.
Here it is.
Together.
Cancel red alert!
Cancel red alert. Oh, thank you, CBS All Access.
Burnt Tomato.
Burnt Tomato. Sounds like a character name. My name is Burnt Tomato. Everything was fine. He did make the pizza. Now, as I watch further in the episode, it's hard to tell whether or not they actually consume or enjoy the pizza. I don't quite remember. They do have a table which has 75 candles on it. And so maybe it's hard to eat the pizza. Maybe they should have just cooked the pizza on the candles. Then they wouldn't have that. But regardless, we finally get to move on to the final scene where the three of them hug. And that's where we get back to our nostalgia. Also where Picard and Riker sit on that dock and hug. And it is such a Frake Stewart moment. And then when the three of them hug, it's Sirtis and Frakes and Stewart, and it's so beautiful. And we don't care if it's the characters or the actors hugging, do we? Because 30 years later, 35 years later, let's see, 87, 97, 2007, 2017, 33 years later from when they started, we get to see them again. What a gift it is. Nostalgia generally does not pay off. You see all these reboots, like Mad About You and Will and Grace, and even the Star Trek reboots sometimes, and it's not satisfying. But this felt satisfying. It felt satisfying to me. I don't know about you. I mean, there's still so many bad parts of this, and it looks like from next week there's more bad stuff coming up because we get less of three characters we love hugging. And that's all I want to see. I just want to see the entire cast get together and hug. Everything else is fine. I'm watching this sword fight now. This goofball with a sword, all these Romulans who have disruptors, and he's got a sword. How is he going to get any further in this? It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. I was able to look past all of this because at the very end, he beams away, Picard beams away, and we see Riker and Troy and little Kester as a family, and we're happy. Once in a while, you don't burn the pizza. And it turns out pretty good. I'm Mike McCafferty, and I just want to talk about making the pizza. And Star Trek.
Train comes in, everybody rides.
Your daddy can put them up, can he?
I meant to say that it should be hauled away as garbage.